gotta see it my way. Do I have to keep on talking till I can go?
Good morning, everybody.
While you see it your way, run the risk of knowing that our love may soon be gone.
I'm Bo Mitchell. This is You Get
we
the Blessing.
We can work it out. We can work it out.
Think and these are the Beatles. Saying.
You can get it wrong and still you think that it's all right. Think of what I'm saying. We can work it out and get it straight. I'll say goodnight.
And what they're saying is true. We can work it out, but we work it out here on this program by the power of Jesus Christ in our lives, and we exist because we introduce you each week to guests that we believe are impacting this community and this country for the cause of Christ. And our guest today is Gabe Hernandez with Youth for Christ. Gabe, welcome to our program.
Thank you for having me.
Sure glad you're here.
Okay.
And we're going to talk about your background first, and then we'll lead up to your conversion experience, how you came to faith in Christ, and then talk about what you're doing now with Youth for Christ.
Sounds good.
So where are you from?
Originally from Fresno, California. It's a little no-name town in the middle of nowhere.
Oh, no. We've all heard of Fresno. And family background was what? Good home or mom and dad there?
Had a mom that really tried her hardest to raise me the best she could. Dad kind of bounced out early in the relationship, decided that he would prefer to get high, to get drunk, to do other things. He had an amazing job growing up. He was a master's mechanic, and my mom would have to actually go in and ask for his paycheck before he got paid because he would take it and go blow it, and we would end up hungry, homeless, you know, all the things that would follow those decisions.
So did you grow up feeling scared and poor and without a dad?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, the little bit that I saw of him, he was a better friend than he ever was a father. He's since passed on a handful of years ago, and like we never really fully reconciled. So yeah, definitely growing up, my mom was a very, very strong figure in my life. She was, very, very big German-Irish woman, so she would run out in the middle of the street and be screaming at people, especially when we were hanging out with the homies and stuff, man. She would just go out there and be like, get the, you know, off of my lawn, you know, this and that. So it was funny how these hardcore gangbangers would run away from this, you know, just single white woman, you know.
So she taught you some of that strength yourself, I suppose.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Now, you were drawn to the gangs as a kid.
Definitely. When my dad was around, we grew up in a particular part of town, the east side of Fresno, and there was just something about it, something that just kind of called. My dad was a first-generation American, and my mom's family had migrated over from Oklahoma during the Dust Bowl. So you got this kind of, you know, just this chance meeting. You got this white woman and a Hispanic male. They get together, and yeah, we ended up in the hood, and yeah, there was just something about it, just like the camaraderie, or I don't know, just something kind of called out. And my mom did everything she could to keep us off those streets, trying to entertain us when we were inside of the house. Hey, you don't need to go out there, all that stuff. And would even move us as far away from that neighborhood as she could, but because, you know, we had aunts and uncles and grandparents and all that stuff that kind of lived in that neighborhood, we would go back on the weekends, we'd go back for parties and stuff like that, so we always got a glimpse of what that life was like.
So you were drawn to that life maybe because you were not fully embraced as a normal family, and here you found friendship and love and camaraderie and challenges or whatever in the form of a gang. And how old were you when that all was happening?
So I think the first time it really hit my heart, I was about 8 years old, and it took up into my teens before it came to fruition. It was just like I was a wannabe. I was creating my own gangs and creating my own kind of family structures. I got involved in illegal graffiti when I was younger. I'm an artist, and so that was a way to put my kind of put myself out there. So I'd go tagging on walls. I got hooked up with a tagging crew, and
well, I don't know what that means.
Oh, okay. So basically an illegal graffiti group. So kind of like a graffiti
tag
gang.
Was the part I didn't
tagging
know.
Yeah, it's just slang for graffiti.
Oh,
just so tagging, marking something.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah. Mark, and you just do buildings or?
Yeah, whatever. Street signs. I mean, just anything that was available that we would get our name up, just so we can get recognition. Street
fame. So you have to do it at night?
You can do it in the daytime. That's how I picked up my first charge, was I was sitting at a bus stop, just kind of bored, and started writing, you know, just writing on the bus stop.
Really? Yeah. And a cop came along and
by, and it was an unmarked car. He shook his finger at me. I shook a finger at him, and he gets out of the car, and I'm like, oh,
different
snap.
Fingers.
Different finger. Yeah, yeah, number one or number two. So he got out of the car and said, yeah, that's not the right thing to do. I was going to let you go with a warning, but now I'm going to arrest you. So that was a first time I had my run-in with the law.
So it's stupid to flip the finger to a cop.
Definitely.
So you were being stupid, and what did the cop do to you?
So he handcuffed me right there. They reached out to my mom. My mom was able to pick me up there, and I got yelled at the whole way home. There's a couple instances where...
Didn't keep you, but scared the tar out of you.
Yeah.
Or mom, almost.
Nah. Yeah.
Didn't scare you enough.
My mom scared me more than the cops did.
Remember, I had that one time my son got called to the principal up at Littleton High School and told the principal, there's nothing you can do to me that's going to be as bad as what my dad's going to do to me. So very young age, that's amazing. 8-year-old, you're starting to be drawn to this stuff. And I know you eventually really got busted, but how did this progress, and I should say, how did this digress into a prison sentence?
Yeah, so here I am doing graffiti, and I really wanted to be invited into a gang. I never wanted to walk up and say, hey, I want to be a part of this, because then in my mind, they would always have a way of saying, hey, you wanted us, we didn't want you. So I wanted to be pursued, if I can put it in those terms. And because of my ability to do graffiti, my writing styles, I got approached by a guy, and he was like, hey man, why don't you write for us? Why don't you just kind of be our graffiti artist? And it was about a time in California back in like, you know, the early 90s where tagging crews or illegal graffiti crews were joining up with gangs. And so
like
I was like,
Crips and Bloods.
Yeah, similar to that.
Okay. By the way, let me pause a second. We're listening to Gabe Hernandez, our special guest today on You Get the Blessing. I'm Bo Mitchell, your host. Keep going, Gabe. Sorry to interrupt.
So, yeah, the guy hits me up and he says, hey, man, you know, you want to write for us? So I'm doing this writing, tagging on the wall. They're giving me, you know, the names and the hood and how to do it and stuff like that. And basically it was like, you know, a year went by and I'm realizing these other guys are getting jumped in. They're getting beat up to prove that they're able to be gang members. And I remember looking at these guys, I was like, man, these guys are tough. They're, you know, they're nothing like me. They haven't put in the time, the work that I've done. So I went to one of my homeboys and said, why do these fools get to, you know, why are they put on before me? I've been putting in a lot of work. And it's like, we just figured that you were happy doing what you were doing. You know, we're not going to force you to get in. You know what I mean? So it was kind of interesting, the conversation as it went around. I was like, well, I've just been waiting for you guys to ask me.
Good.
You know, very open and honest about how I feel. And I said, all right, well, then we're going to put you on. So later on that night, I got surrounded by, you know, I think it was like 14, 15 people, and they beat the crap out of me until I got put on the ground.
That was the initiation.
Then they pick you up and tell you that they love you. I went home and I told my older brother, and my older brother told my mom, and my mom came in and beat me worse than they did. Totally unacceptable at home. My mom did not want a first generation gang member or second. So I had to learn how to pretend really quickly that I wasn't a part of this, because I didn't want to get beat up by my mom again.
So now you're not only living one bad life, but you're living two lives.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that was,
how long did you juggle that?
Up until I was almost 18, I remember the moment. I got my little brother into the gang and a lot of influence to my little sister as well.
Gosh.
Yeah, yeah.
Good stuff, Gabe.
I have this saying, you know, and I'd say it every time I tell my story, is like, the very things that I would let no man do to my family, I did to them willingly.
Wow.
So beating my brother up, putting him in danger, getting them addicted to drugs, you know, all that stuff. And
what kind of drugs were you doing?
So we started out just like everybody else, just kind of drinking. It progressed into weed. And by 15, I was a full-blown methamphetamine addict.
You remember just being crazed out of your mind?
Yeah. Yeah, I remember at one point I got down to about 180 pounds. Got about a 6'4 frame.
And you're what right now?
Close to 400. So, yeah, I was
strong.
Sucked up.
You were. Should have probably been dead.
Probably a lot of times.
By age 15.
Yeah.
So Bible says, choose your friends wisely and carefully, for you shall become like them. So you parents that are listening, you think you're not supposed to be tuned into what your kids are doing? I mean, mm-hmm. Jim Dobson, Focus on the Family, would say, read their mail, listen to their phone calls, Find out what they're doing. Get in the middle of it.
Yeah, but, definitely.
Your dad being gone, as tough as your mom was, she couldn't control it.
Yeah, single mom, four kids. She had to pick her battles. And I was really good at balancing life. I would come home and essentially dust off all that. A couple of my mentors later on, they're like, man, we're amazed. You're very well-spoken. You have manners. You know, you have all these things. Like, how do you have these, but you lived this crazy corrupt lifestyle? And I was like, man, when I went home, we kept our elbows off the table. We chewed with our mouths closed. Like, we didn't speak ill of our mom. You know what I mean? So it's like, when I got to put on that other person, I went out and I did it to the best of my ability.
You are well-spoken. And that is amazing that you chose to walk both sides of that street you were faced with.
It was rough. You know, one of my funniest stories, me and my mom talk about this often, I was in prison, and like, you know, while most people are anticipating a letter coming back, you know, you figure you write a letter, it takes 2 weeks to get to where you send it. Then it takes them time to write it. It takes 2 weeks to get back because they have to search it and read it. And I would get it back and there would be spelling corrections.
What you're saying there is that all your mail, outgoing, incoming, is reviewed by somebody in the prison system before you ever see it.
Yeah. And then it gets to me, and I see these red marks on it. My mom's correcting my spelling. You know what I mean? It's like, Mom, I'm in prison for being bad. You know what I mean? And you're worried about my grammar?
Let's talk about how did you get to prison? What happened? happened that ultimately brought the hammer down?
Yeah, years of gangbanging, years of just violence and drug abuse, and you know, little by little you start to let go of what reality is and how you treat people, and you start to get away with stuff. I was in my 20s and got into carjacking people. I mean, most people don't say that, but I thought it was funny. One night I was with a girlfriend, and there was an instance that happened, and I got mad and I grabbed the guy out of the car and just threw him out. I used my size, and the story just went on. They kept talking about, man, Gabe's crazy, man. He just snatched this dude up and bounced him out of the car. And so I was like, man, if that's going to be my next level of making a name for myself, maybe that's just what I'll do. I'll just be that crazy guy.
How many times did you do it?
More than I can count.
Really?
And
people out of their cars and then steal their car.
Just use my size, and that's what I would do. I wouldn't use a weapon or anything. I was actually arguing with my girlfriend one day. We were arguing over our drug addictions. She was addicted to PCP. I was addicted to meth and alcoholic, all that stuff. And we ended up leaving. I left her and basically came to the agreement that we weren't going to quit doing our drugs. And I spent the last bit of money that I had to buy a beer to calm down my nerves because I was high on meth, and just picked a car with a woman in it. I mean, just a very cowardly thing to do because I just didn't have the energy to fight anybody. And I went to yank this woman out of her car, and she just fought me. She wouldn't give it up. And I found out later, after I got arrested for the carjacking, they charged me with 3 counts of kidnapping and strong arm robbery. I found out later that she had 2 kids in the back seat of the car. Mm. So this was a mother fighting for her kids the way my mom fought for me my whole life.
And that was the incident that put you in prison?
That's what put me in prison.
And what was your sentence?
So they offered me 75 years. I had a pretty extensive county jail background and pretty much every program that you can think of that they put me into, man, anger management, drug counseling, therapy, everything under the sun. And they're like, look, man, we're tired. We need to put this guy away for a while. So I started fighting it. I had got more time than money. So I took months of fighting it in the county jail, and they came to me with another offer. And I'm like, hey, I didn't really do anything. Like, I get it, man. I may have scared this woman. I may have done this. I may have done that. But this is my attitude at the time. Finally, on a technicality, I got it dropped down. They said they were going to give me 5 years with the potential of doing 7. And so I said, I'm going to take it. I'm going to go for it. So I go into prison, and I remember being scared.
Is it federal or state?
This is state prison.
State.
Yeah. So I go to state prison. I remember being scared, and I'm like, you know, man, I just got to suck it up. I got to be a man. I did the crime. Let's do this. And when I heard my nickname being called out, I'm like, this isn't going to be so bad. I got friends in there. I've made a name for myself, and these guys are reaching out to me, and they're like, oh, we got a big homie here now. We got a big, you know, big soldier. So
we're going to start all over inside what we were doing outside.
Yeah. So started over, and within less than a year, I was basically the shot caller for the gang that I was in.
Oh, my word.
It's not a shot caller. It's called a MAC rep. It's very diplomatical the way that they do it. So it's a 51% vote says go, and you have kind of like a chairman who kind of decides which way we move on stuff.
We're listening to the voice of Gabe Hernandez, who's our guest today on You Get the Blessing. I'm Bo Mitchell, your host, and Gabe's describing the tail end of a childhood spent without a dad, just chasing acceptance, recognition in gangs in his a town in California, and culminating, I guess, at what age was this? 20s?
Yeah, early 20s.
Early 20s with a prison sentence of 10 years, yeah. Reduced maybe by how long did you actually stay?
So I did the full five, and then with violations and new charges compounded, it was a total of 10.
Total of 10. Well, at what point did God enter the formula here? Because you are a changed man today, and you sit before me obviously sober, not only of a right mind, but of a great mind and a great heart for God. So what was the first part of that formula?
Yeah, so I grew up Catholic, so I had a faith, but it didn't really turn into anything. It turned into a lot of anger towards God because he wasn't around to help me with stuff, and that's how I looked at it. I looked at God like a genie. But, you know, it's that old-time saying is that somewhere, somehow, somebody told me something that stuck with me, and I am sitting in a
seed was planted.
Yep.
You may not even know it was planted, but the time was right, that seed grew.
Yep. So I'm sitting in a jail cell. I had been out of prison for about 9 days, about a half hour after getting out of prison. I smoked meth, and it did something to my mind. I was hallucinating. I was hearing voices. I was very panicked.
So nothing through prison.
Yeah.
You didn't go prison fellowship. You didn't go church.
Nah.
Even at the bottom of the bucket, you didn't seek God.
Nope.
Now you're out of prison. You do some meth, and you lose your mind.
I'm thrown in a jail cell, and I remember a guard walking past me. Thrown in a jail cell. Yeah, I got arrested after for being dirty.
How long were you out?
I was out 9 days.
9 days, yeah. And back in. That mm-hmm. is really stupid.
Yeah. That's kind of...
Sorry.
No, that's kind of just my life choices, man.
You know, I use that word because I've had people converted to Christ by saying, you're just being stupid when it comes to God issues. So settle your affair with God and make a decision here to change things rather than keep beating your head against the same wall you've been beating it against. So you go back into jail 9 days later, and now what happened?
Yeah, so I'm sitting in this...
Tell me a chaplain showed up.
Nope. I'm sitting in this jail cell, and I wish I could tell you that it was, you know, that somebody came to me, that somebody helped. It was a guard walking by doing his daily checks, making sure that I was still alive and breathing so that they could send me to wherever they wanted to send me. I remember he walked past me one time, and he shook his head in disgust, and I had enough of inside of me to know that I didn't want to be pitied, and I got really angry and rushed the cell door and started banging my head on it. Mind you, I was in a straitjacket. The blood had saturated the front of it. I was crazy. I was talking to people that weren't there. And I just remember saying, hey, I'm not the one to be effing pitied, man. Like, you know, you don't pity me. And it was just a moment where I kind of looked up to the very similar ceiling, fluorescent lights. And I told God, I said, I don't want to effing be like this. That was my prayer, man. God can handle my vulgarity. He can handle my ignorance. He can handle all of that. He handled an F word in my first prayer I ever said to him. And I believe he healed me instantly right there. I got my mind back. I was coherent. I was able to speak. And it wasn't long after that they allowed me into another cell. I'm sitting there for a little bit. I don't know what day it is. I've lost 14 days of my life is what I found out later, is that I was so high and bouncing off the wall inside of this jail. One guard told me, he said, we were literally waiting a couple of more hours before we were going to commit you to a mental hospital. Mm. You were under evaluation to be committed, and you just snapped out of it. So I'm sitting in this jail cell. They're giving me some breathing room. So we're going to leave you alone for a couple hours before we put a cellie in. So I appreciate that.
Before we put a what?
A cellmate, another person in
Sully.
There.
Okay.
Yeah. A guy was walking outside of the door. It's called a porter. They're inmates that volunteer to help so they can get time off their sentence. Guy walks past my door, said, "Hey man, can you do two favors for me?" He says, "Yeah." I said, "I need to know what day it is, because I don't know what, I've lost all concept of time, and I want a Bible." And I said, "Keep the Bible on the under, man. I don't want you to tell anybody about it, because I don't want them to think I'm weak.
Don't want to look bad or look weak."
And he said, "It's May 12, 2006. I shook my head. I was like, "Man, I got released the end of April, and it was May 12th. And he shot the Bible underneath the door. And again, it's just one of those things. Somebody had planted a seed, had told me something. So if you don't know what to read in the Bible, you can go to the Proverbs, and whatever day of the month it is, you can read it." So I started reading Proverbs 12. And I'm going down the line. I'm like, this is the stupidest thing I've ever read in my life. The gold and the this and the that. I'm like, come on, the angry wife, all this stuff. Like, okay,
you know,
man.
Don't feel like the Lone Ranger.
No.
There's a lot of people that look at the Bible and think,
yeah,
man, do I got to read all this?
Yeah, this is some dumb stuff. So I get to Proverbs 12:9, and it says, "Better to be a nobody and have a servant than pretend to be somebody and have no food." And it hit me that I had been pretending my whole entire life to be something that I wasn't called to be. I was trying to be a wolf in sheep's clothing, you know what I mean? But really, I was a sheep pretending to be a wolf.
Mm.
And how that came about is, I'm sitting there, classification guard comes in. Basically, they find out everything they need to know about you before they place you somewhere within the jail. "Hey, are you this? Are you that? What gang are you in?" Guy comes in, he says, "Hey, we haven't had a chance to classify you. What are you?" I said, "I'm a nobody." I quit gangbanging on that day, on May 12th of 2006. I said, "I'm a nobody. I don't want to be affiliated with this anymore." And he says, "You understand what that means, that you're a drop, you're a dropout, you're going to be put on a different yard, and your enemies are going to come after you, and your friends are even going to come at you harder." I said, "I don't care." Went to a dropout yard, and I'm sitting there, and I'm like, okay, God, you know, I'm reading the Bible every day. I'm reading the Gospels, and I'm like, man, this Jesus is weak. I mean, go 2 miles for someone that says to walk one, give your tunic over, turn your cheek. I'm like, what kind of punk is this dude? You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to be this guy, man. I want God. Isn't God like a, you know, isn't he a bad dude or something, you know?
Actually, you weren't the first to feel that. The persecuted Jews were looking for a Messiah.
Exactly.
To kick the tar out of the Romans.
That's the Messiah I was looking for.
Yeah, when Jesus showed up, they're like, they didn't recognize him.
Yeah.
So you weren't having it either.
So here I am in this particular prison for 8 months doing a violation, and I'm just trying to figure out how to get my life rooted. I'm like, I'm not a gang member anymore, so I don't have all these responsibilities. I'm going to be a changed person. But I wasn't the gang, it was me. And so it was about eight to 10 days before I'm about to get out, and these guards basically made a derogatory comment towards an older Hispanic man. And I walked up to the guards and said, "Hey, man, it's not your job to do that. I know you got a hard job. I'm trying to be respectful of what you're doing." And because I challenged their authority, guard pushed me up against the wall. He said I flexed on him when I hit the wall. He said he felt my back tense up. He thought I was going to hit him, so him and his buddies beat the tar out of me.
Hmm.
So here I am lying on the ground, beat up for standing up for somebody. I'm like, man, I'm just not winning in this situation. They throw me in the hole.
Oh, God.
I'm sitting in the hole, which is segregation, and I look back up to these lights again, and I say, "All right, God, if you get me out of this, I'll serve you. I don't want to be here anymore." And after 8 days, the doors open, they release me on parole, and within 25 days, I got high again. So miracle healing. If you get me out of this, I'll serve you. You know, I don't know where God was in that.
Cut your deal with God, and then you backed out.
I backed out, crawfished him.
Hmm. Wow. So what changed next time?
So I'm sitting in my parole agent's office, and she basically tells me, she's like, "I violated again." And she's like, "I hate you more than any other person I've ever worked with."
Really?
And I said, so, well, thanks for being honest. She says, I want you to go to prison for the rest of your life or die. So where do you want to go? Here's some rope. Hang yourself. I said, man, I want to go to this program where I had a friend. Ended up at this small little program in a town called Del Rey, just south of Fresno, called Shining Light Ministries. It's ran by a pastor named Andy Holguin. He was a motorcycle president, national president for the Mongols. And here's this huge Hispanic man, you know, and you know, I'm in this program and I'm hating every minute of it. And I'm watching these people get slain in the spirit and speak in tongues. And I'm told if I don't do that, that I don't have the Holy Spirit in me. And one night something happens and I go up to the front of the altar and I said, hey, man, I want you as bad as you want these people. You know, I definitely see that you want them. Will you want me that much?
Wow.
And I'm praying, and this pastor comes up to me and he wraps his arms around me and he says, you just been holding on to it too long, man. And I let go of everything that day. I gave everything to God, and I woke up the next day and said, I want to be a pastor. And I enrolled in Bible college. I had been out of prison 11 months, enrolled in this little Bible college in Fresno. And here I am, shave head, tattoo on the back of my head, all tatted back. And these, you know, little white kids are looking at me like, why would you let, don't they have special schools for people like that?
How do you get in?
Yeah, but I finished my degree. I was at the top of my class in doing it. Got that summa cum laude.
Sorry to speed up.
No.
What do you do now with Youth for Christ?
Yeah, so because of that, I was working with Youth for Christ in Fresno. I met my wife through Youth for Christ. She was out here. We got married 3 years ago, came out here, and it's been a long process of just working with broken communities. So now I'm up in Adams County. I work with kids that are on probation. So having a prison background and then being cleared to be able to work with these kids is amazing. I work with these kids that, you know,
are walking the same path you used to walk.
Exactly.
Now, that's the God of the order I was talking about, and logic, who also is the God of the miraculous in bringing you out of that and preparing you. You're sifted all that time, and the reason we get sifted as wheat is for higher service, and now you're in your higher service.
Mm-hmm.
So you're a miracle, man. You should be dead.
Yeah.
Shouldn't you? What's your wife's name?
Kim.
Kim, nice going. You got a good man here.
Reminder that.
I don't want to sound like your grandpa, but I'm proud of you, and I'm thankful for a God that doesn't give up on us, does he?
No.
He just kept
mm-hmm.
He kept providing for you the way of escape. You take it and then fall back in the old trap. Take it, fall back. But finally.
Yeah.
And folks, that's our job in the salvation process. We got to respond. We can't just always keep making wrong decisions and expect to be bailed out. Some wrong decisions have scars that last forever, if not death in some cases. So, Gabe, nice going. And thanks for your testimony. Thanks for what you do for Youth for Christ and all the people you're touching these days.
Thank you.
All right. You are a wonderful guest. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in today to You Get the Blessing. And we'll see you again here next week.
Do I have to keep on talking till I can go on? While you see it your way, run the risk of knowing that I